Rebel Force Radio is coming to Wizard World Cleveland. Join Jimmy and Jason for RFR Live. Details coming next week on RFR. For more info about Wizard World, visit wizardworld.com/comic-con/Cleveland.
This is so wizard.
Rebel Force Radio is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
I'm not used to all this bright light. I like to do it in the dark. I really do. I like to record the show in the dark. But we always trying to improve, especially for our Patreon supporters, who are able to download and watch the video of Rebel Force Radio. So even though I like to keep things very low-key in terms of light, in fact, I was getting a lecture before we started recording about my lighting situation. Before,
it wasn't a lecture. It was an observation that you took way too personally.
Well, that's what I do. I'm kind of a sensitive guy, and I do take things. I know.
You're sensitive like gingivitis. I just touch your gum, and you start bleeding. So, welcome to Rebel Force Radio, ladies and gentlemen.
I am your second wife, by the way.
Your two friendly best pal podcasters are coming with you this week. No, it's all good, man. I'm so happy to be here with you, Jason. And
I am too.
Get together to talk Star Wars.
Yeah, even though I've got real like blinding lights around me, you can't tell by the video because it's all looking like it's meant to look. But I'm not used to it being so bright in here. All the buttons have got a glare on, so if I'm a little late on the draw, you'll know why.
Well, but let's go full screen here and get full look at your environs so we can really fully appreciate. Now, so viewers of our video via Patreon's All Access, RFR All Access, will notice that Jason is not doing the podcast this week from his typical suburban basement studio, but he's actually in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. How could this be? This is a miracle of technology.
Yeah, Galaxy's Edge came to me this week. I didn't have to go out there.
It's odd, though, that you're sitting on the center console unit there. That's usually where Han and Chewie reach up to punch it to go to hyperspace, and you're just sitting right on top of the gear shift there.
Well, you know what this is? This is like when you were a kid and you'd go on vacation and you have to sit in the back seat. If you had more than two people, someone had to take the hump seat.
The hump.
I'm on the hump.
Now, have they actually set you up with the toddler seat there, the little kid chair for you to sit in?
Oh, very funny. Because I'm short? Because I'm short? Because I need a booster seat? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I thought we were just making references to childhood. That's all. Hey, welcome again to Rebel Force Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're your two best friend podcasters, the friendliest podcasters who have such great chemistry and warmth toward each other.
Well, we've known each other for like a decade and a half.
Here to blow your minds with Star Wars conversation. Here we are, just a few days before the launch of Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So actually, as this show goes live, today is the day.
Right. It's Happy Clone Wars Day. Clone Wars saved.
Clone Wars saved. Hashtag that.
Yeah.
And so we're looking forward to that. If you missed the information that we passed along at the end of the show last week, you'll want to know that RFR Clone Wars Declassified will return. Very similar to the format we did for Season 6, The Lost Missions, where the episodes are going to be focusing in on the entire four-part story arcs. So we won't be going episode by episode with Clone Wars Declassified. We're going to be going arc by arc. So there are going to be three shows to celebrate the final season of the Clone Wars. There's going to be three live shows happening on the Friday evenings. Each arc finale debuts. Mm-hmm. So when the fourth episode, which is the fourth part of the Bad Batch arc, launches in February, in March, hello, on that Friday, we'll be live, just like we were with the Mandalorian after show. We'll be doing extended shows to discuss every episode of the arc, and we'll have special guests, and we'll be taking live calls. So you'll want to be able to check us out on YouTube and be sure to subscribe to RFR so you'll get notification every time we go live and you'll be able to call in. It's going to be great. So the first half of the show will be primarily roundtable format, and then the second half of the show we'll be taking your calls live, and I'm sure our special guests will be wanting to stick around for that. We have a short list of special guests that we want to add to the show. You know, from our typical whack pack, the RFR whack pack. Billy Mack, of course, wants to be involved.
Yeah.
And so we'll definitely have him sitting in for at least one of those live shows. So look for him. They're going to be happening in March, April, and May. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
so
it's going
to
really be a good time.
Looking forward to Clone Wars coming back. I'm very excited.
I am too. I'm just glad to have some new Star Wars to talk about. We're so greedy now.
Like, Rise of Skywalker has been out of the theaters for what, like half an hour now? We need something new. Bring us more.
Well, you know, I got so spoiled with The Mandalorian. I mean, that was like a mini movie every week. I don't think we'll see anything like it again until Mandalorian season 2 comes out, because it doesn't look like they're going to get anything out of the gate before that.
Oh, no. Yeah. Of course not. There's not going to be any big, I mean, you know, after Clone Wars wraps up its final season in May, then we're not going to have much for a few months until October when The Mandalorian comes.
Well, we got to chug through that new box set. We got to get through all the 4K transfers.
See, now you're talking.
Yeah.
See, I like this. I like this. We have so much Rise of Skywalker still happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be happening concurrently with the final season of The Clone Wars, which is kind of exciting. And we'll be getting the novelization, the Blu-ray with all the bonus features. And, oh, by the way, a lot of people have been contacting us saying, are you guys going to do one of your Rise of Skywalker commentaries? Well, of course we are. We just didn't do it yet.
Yeah.
We should have done it by now, I think.
Yeah,
we're saving
have.
It, and that'll launch in early March. So the film may still be in some second-run theaters, and you can take us with you into the theater with RFR in your ear pods and AirPods or whatever, and watch episode 9 with us yapping in your ears the whole time. So those are always a lot of fun. And you know what? Those are also great just to listen to a standalone podcast. You don't need to be watching the movie to hear us talk about it, because I think we speak in fairly descriptive terms.
Well, we do, and we also go on some tangents.
We get old.
You know, so and it's like, oh, you know, 20 minutes has gone by. Oh, we should talk about what the movie right now. We're watching a movie.
Well, we'll try to stay focused.
We'll try to stay Maybe focused. Billy Mack will keep us on task this time around.
Yeah, Billy does want to be a part of it. That's primarily the reason why the commentary has been a little bit delayed, I think. We did have a false start a few weekends ago. We thought we were going to get together and record a show, but we didn't. But that's still top priority for us. Those are a lot of fun for us to do. And I'm looking forward to seeing Rise of Skywalker a seventh time. So hopefully you guys will be enjoying those commentaries when we launch them. Because we plan on going back through then
the whole saga. We got a good reason to do it. New transfers, beautiful 4K resolution. It's going to be great. And there are some changes. You know, the most obvious is the McClunky. But there are some more subtle changes in the picture composition and some of the audio mixing. I've been doing some research. Not a whole lot. I think they only let George tinker with that first one.
Wow. I don't know. That's interesting, because we've only heard him talk. Jason, I remember you and me once were in the hallowed hallways of Lucasfilm.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And And somebody dropped word to us that George had prepped the 4K release of Return of the Jedi. So I think his
he was up to Jedi. Okay, so he's he worked on. Well, they were all being prepped for those 3D releases. They had to. They were going to do the 3D conversions.
But it was
4K.
It was 4K. It was the very same thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what they were using for the 3D transfer.
Yeah, that was the print.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I don't know how much George was like really overseeing the 3D transfer process. I mean, you know, he was signing off and improving on things, but you know, it's not like he was there
so
in the studio
about that. He really did. He seemed super passionate about that 3D thing. And then he, you know, he started out with the prequels, and it just I mean, I love the prequels. You know, we don't make any apologies for that. But when you look at the decision
when you're launching,
made, yeah,
you know, this whole new thing, this whole new run of putting Star Wars back in the theaters, I think you really want to start off with your hardest hitters first, and that is, of course, the original trilogy. But I think George was just sort of enamored with the idea that he was getting the opportunity to release the films in their numerical sequence. I think he was kind of jacked by that whole idea.
Well, and also the digital. Remember, the digital films were going to be easier to convert into 3D. So, you know, Phantom Menace, some of it was shot in digital. Most of it was on film. But then by the time they got to Attack of the Clones, I think all of Attack of the Clones was shot digital. I don't think they did any of that on film.
I believe you're right.
And then Phantom Menace, also, or Revenge of the Sith, was also all digital. I think Phantom Menace was the last where they used film. But there was some stuff that was some stuff that they were using.
I think you're right. Yeah, you know,
because didn't they invent? They actually invented a camera just for Attack of the Clones. Panasonic did, I thought. Was it Panasonic?
I think so. I think so. These techie questions, though, I don't retain that information as well as I do some other Star Wars.
But there was a camera that George had developed just for the prequels.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about it. Yeah. It is that digital camera.
He can do that.
And George, God bless him, he really made a strong push to get digital projectors into the cinemas, despite the fact that a lot of the industry and theater owners themselves were kind of reluctant to it. But now, you know, he started yet another filmmaking and film distribution revolution by doing that. So pretty good stuff.
We're going to get nuts in here.
It is nuts in here. There's George himself checking in.
That's what he said to those theater owners. We're going to get nuts in here. It's going to be crazy, crazy. But you know what? This week's show is kind of like more Rise of Skywalker aftermath. We've got some of the personalities making the rounds, including Harrison Ford. So the cat's out of the bag. Big spoiler alert here, but...
Spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen Rise of Skywalker yet...
Spoiler alert.
You haven't seen Rise of Skywalker. You really shouldn't be listening to this show.
No. How'd you find us? If you haven't. Of course, Harrison Ford is in it, reprising his role as Han Solo for likely the last time. And since the cat is out of the bag, he said he talked about it on Jimmy Kimmel and then made an appearance. He's out making the rounds for this Call of the Wild movie that he's doing. And he's got this scraggly Harrison look in this thing.
Yeah, but
the beard
he doesn't
and
actually
the longer hair.
Right. He looks kind of like the Gordon's fisherman a little bit. But I mean he does.
Yeah, he does.
But Harrison, you know, he doesn't have that appearance out on the promotional trail.
No, he's very clean cut. It made me wonder what movie he might be doing.
His hair looks very Han Solo-esque if you ask me.
It does. Indy?
We're doing it again. I could They're going to de-age us this time.
Hey, don't laugh.
I know. Stranger things have happened. Looking at you, Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro and Irishman. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the role of Indiana Jones recast by another actor or a de-aged Harrison Ford? Putting you on the spot.
You know, I can't even answer that question yet because I don't feel like I have enough experience seeing films that have this de-aging process in it, believe it or not. You know, going back to the Tron remake, or not remake.
Actually, further back than that, the X-Men movie.
Even before that.
X-Men. Do you remember? I think it was X-Men 3 had a de-aged Patrick Stewart and a de-aged Ian McKellen.
And I know they've de-aged the bad MF-er Samuel Jackson. I know he's been.
Why do they even need to do that? The man hasn't aged.
I wouldn't say hasn't aged. He's aged very well.
Black don't crack.
Well, you know, when Sam turned 60, I'm like, wow, he looks like he's 40. When Sam turned 70, I said, yeah, he looks like he's about 70. You know,
and of course, you and I are de-aged. If you're watching the video of Rebel Force Radio, you know that Jimmy Mack and I employ some of the highest technology.
Yeah. The de-aging, Yes, except Jason's on board the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. I'm still in my stinky basement studio here with the door behind me. It's very unexotic looking.
But at least you're in a studio. I have a cinder block. Well, I shouldn't break the fourth wall, but I don't even have...
Or the cinder block wall, for that matter.
Right.
But I'll tell you what. So what had happened was we were supposed to both have the green screen technology for this week's show.
What are you talking about, green screen? What do you mean?
Fourth wall.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get it. So I was originally supposed to be on board the Millennium Falcon this week also, but the Millennium Falcon arrived, and I found it to be too cumbersome to install in my drop ceiling. So I had to send the Millennium Falcon back for another Millennium Falcon that has a stand and is collapsible.
I didn't even think about your ceiling. When you said that, I'm like, oh yeah, of course.
I could use the suspension up there to hang down a hook or something, but it didn't even match up, not even close. So lesson learned. Mm. So they have the stand up one. So I'll be coming at you next week from probably the ice planet of Hoth.
Hoth.
I don't even need a green screen for that. All I have to do is just open the door, and you'll see out the window behind me. You got your ice planet Hoth right out the window. But that's what we're doing, though. We're trying new things. And we're trying to, one day it's green screen, the next day it's going to be de-aging, and then we'll be completely CGI.
Yeah.
And we won't even have to come down here to do the podcast anymore. We'll just stay with our families and let our CGI counterparts hold it. And they'll probably carry on much more interesting conversations.
I like that idea. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's how we're
going
to retire.
That's our own cloning technology going on here. But for now, we're still real people. And you guys are never shy in passing along your appreciation for the show. And that's all we really want is your appreciation. But every once in a while, you have the motivation to express yourself and your love for Rebel Force Radio by sending Jason and I stuff. And this has been going on for years, actually. And I have felt bad that I haven't really taken time in each and every show to thank the people who've been kind enough to share just little trinkets and things, just little appreciations of their love for Rebel Force Radio. But I know part of the reason I think I never would bring it up on the show is because I don't want to really, encourage people or make people feel
we're not soliciting. Yeah, we don't want to be soliciting that sort of thing.
No, I don't. But I certainly won't send it back when it shows up. So,
well, that would just be rude. You can't send it back. You have to show that you appreciate it.
Let me run through a couple of things here real quick, Jason. And then we have something a little special here where I'm actually going to take you to my kitchen where we're going to open up some mail.
All right.
But the first thing I have is from Duva. Duva, it must be a last name. That's all it said on the package. But I know that he contacted me and said he had some Charles Soule Marvel comics that are signed by the writer himself, Charles Soule. So he sent me this one.
Oh, look at that.
That's pretty cool. And you can see the inscription there from Charles. Or his signature. It's not really an inscription. So he sent me one for me and one for you, Jason.
Oh, that's so nice.
So here's yours. Here, I'm going to have to show it to you. Watch this. You'll like this.
Oh,
the front cover?
Yes.
Okay, read the bubbles? Can you read the bubbles?
I can't read the bubbles, though.
Okay.
The glare is...
He says, look. He says, if you look closely, you have to look closely at this.
Hold on, I'm trying to get that. Do you see anything else?
Well,
it's bagged. You know, it's boarded and bagged. These are highly collectible comic books. Wait a minute. Is that that Jackson behind him?
That's what I was waiting for you to see.
Oh, God.
So what we're looking at here, this is a variant cover. It's a variant cover. So it's a classic scene of
It's classic.
Obi-Wan and Yoda on Dagobah as Luke is flying off toward Cloud City and Empire Strikes Back. And Obi-Wan, the spirit of Obi-Wan, says, that boy is our only hope. And then Yoda says, no, there is another. And then you see Jackson, he's poking his head out there from behind the tree. And then Yoda says, not you.
Oh, God.
So that's great. So I'll send that one to you. You get the Jackson one.
Yeah. All right.
Also, other cool things. Oh, look at this shirt I got on. It's from Adam. It's a Dark Side psychedelic
Star
Wars.
That's Jimmy Mack right there. That is Jimmy Mack.
That is Dark Side psychedelic with the Star Wars words looking like they come off a poster from a 1968 Fillmore East concert. And the Emperor.
Oh, that's based off of a real poster or an album cover?
It just looks like it has that kind of style, kind of a psychedelic or heavy metal look to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great shirt. It's awesome. I love it. Thank you, Adam. Yeah. One other thing I got here is this is great. From Star Wars artist Kevin Lyle, he gave me a sketch card of Nine Numbs signed by Mike Quinn, the actual.
Oh, how nice. And that is Kevin Lyle's art that we see there.
And that's Kevin Lyle's artwork.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you the story about this card real quick. Rebel Force Radio listeners may have remembered that while in Chicago for Star Wars Celebration, Kevin Lyle had a binder filled with
women.
His one-of-a-kind sketch cards, and it was stolen from his booth overnight at McCormick Place.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that. There was quite a drama.
Yes. And so as everyone knows, criminals are dumb. And this guy advertised these cards online, and Kevin and, you know, people looking out for Kevin noticed this stuff immediately. Kevin contacts Chicago Police Department again. Because, of course, they were informed right away when the theft happened. And they caught the guy. So they caught the guy, and they were able to retrieve most of the trading cards. So Kevin asked me then, because they wouldn't send him his artwork back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that. The prosecutor's office doesn't do that. They make you go pick it up. So I drove to 26 in California in just the crappiest neighborhood, and went into the Cook County courthouse, you know, high security courthouse. I had to turn over my iPhone to go in there to meet the prosecutor.
Dang.
They kept it there, and the prosecutor wasn't there.
Oh.
And it was raining outside.
Oh, man. And
so I went back there, 2 days.
Anybody got some Star Wars trading cards?
I left empty-handed, so I had to go back 2 days.
Oh, my God,
later.
It was a total,
I had to go back 2 days later.
Oh, that's terrible.
You know, sunny day this time, I was able to retrieve the card. So I'm really happy I did. But the second time I was driving back, I got pulled over for speeding. I didn't get really pulled over for speeding as much as I got pulled over for talking on my cell phone because I was calling Lyle to make sure that prosecutor was going to be there when I show up.
Wait a minute. You're on the phone with Lyle.
Yes.
Explaining the situation, and you're like, oh, man, I got to go. I'm getting pulled over right now.
I knew, you know, I'm like,
I got
the phone. It was because it was a new car I was driving. We got a Subaru, and it had yet to have my phone programmed into the stereo.
So you couldn't do hands-free? So in Chicago, you get pulled over if you have the phone up to your ear?
Yes. Oh, and this was back in 2019. The laws have become even stricter in 2020.
Back in 2019? We're talking, 2 months ago? What do you mean back in 2019?
I'm just saying when the calendar year turned over,
new laws went into effect. Man.
So, you know. That's what happens. But I got the cards.
All right.
I got the cards and I sent them to Kevin. He was freaking out. You know, he wanted to have them back. He just, you know how it is.
Well, he's an artist.
You know,
he went
through a lot
babies.
Of hell from that guy, that yeah. scumbag ripping him off. So, you know, Kevin went through a lot of stress. And so just him knowing that I had them was, it helped him relax a little bit. And he was kind enough to say, hey, why don't you go ahead and pick a card out of there? And so I said, I picked nine.
Pick numbers. A card, any card. There it is, nine numbers. So, yeah. Did you go through and just pick the ones that were actually autographed by the, or were they all autographed?
They were not all autographed, no. He had some Vaders that were signed by Spencer Wilding.
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been some other actors in there. I can't really remember. It was a while ago. I shot a video of them all. I should send that video to you because now we have video capabilities.
We do have videos capabilities. Speaking of video capabilities, are we ready to play our big video here?
All right. So here's the last thank you. So, thank you, Kevin Lyle.
Yeah.
And then my last thank you is it goes out to Kevin. This is another Kevin.
Uh-huh.
And Kevin sent me this really long, thin package. It was about, I don't know, maybe even a little longer than 4 feet long.
Really long, thin package.
Long, thin package.
I think I saw a movie once called Long, Thin Package.
I was like, what the hell could be in this thing? And so I had no idea what was going to be in it. It was such a weird looking package. So I figured, well, we should shoot video of me opening it up, right?
Would you please just stop saying package?
Would you grow up? Would you just flip and grow up? You know, you're over 40 years old.
I know.
Did you know
I
that?
Know. I know.
Did you know?
I
that?
Know, but I mean, you just keep saying it. Long,
package,
thin package.
Package.
It was like
package.
A strange package.
Show my video. Show the video of me opening the package before I come over there and kick you right in your package.
All right, here it is.
I'm thinking about it.
All right.
It should be inside here. Here it is. Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Look. Oh, what is that, Rogue One?
What the heck is this?
Yes.
Look at this.
It's a big Rogue One. I think it's a store display. A Rogue One store display. Get real close.
Yeah. Well, there's Jin and there's Cassian and the...
Well, thanks, Kevin. I'll definitely find a place for this in the Star Wars room, or maybe even in the studio. This is amazing. Thank you.
Oh, look at that. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Cool. What a nice
pretty
piece.
Pretty cool.
I love the retail stuff. Anything
yeah.
that you know, they had up at
that's great. So thank retail. You so much, everyone. We certainly, you know, we don't ask you to do it, and when you do, we greatly appreciate it. So
we
thank
sure
you
do.
Very much.
We sure do. All right. Well, why don't we hit some voicemail? Let's open things up. That's one of the things we want to focus on this week here on Rebel Force Radio. We get so many great voicemails and emails from all of you. So let's. I think this is Gary from Phoenix. Let's see what Gary has to say.
Gary from Phoenix, listening to the most recent RFR, and you guys were talking about the Mandalorian, and you'd love to see some behind the scenes stuff. And I couldn't agree with you more. We need some of that extra stuff. There's so much I think they could show us, and it tied us over until the fall. The other thing I got thinking about when you guys played the Matthew Wood interview with the McClunky is just how George was ahead of the times back with episode 1, 2, and 3, you know, especially 1, where he released those little internet snippets. Mm-hmm. I mean, those things were fantastic, and we haven't gotten anything like that in the sequels. I mean, nothing. And, man, I would love to see that stuff for The Mandalorian, even for the sequel stuff, or going forward. Those were awesome. I mean, keep in mind, back in 1997, 1998, whenever that was, you know, I was downloading those stupid things on dial-up, waiting all night for them to download. But,
yep.
It'd be awesome to see that stuff with The Mandalorian and the future projects. Anyway, keep up the great work, guys. Bye.
Hey, Gary. Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Yeah, we were talking about some of the opportunities that might lie ahead for The Mandalorian and things that we could do or that things that could be done while we're waiting for season 2. And one of the ideas I had was why not sort of re-release them on Disney Plus with some bonus material? And I would even expand that to audio commentaries. It would be great to hear from Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau or some of the actors. I think that'd be a really nice way to sort of tide people over, take advantage of some of the content you already have. you know, what Gary also mentions, Jim, in addition to Mandalorian, he says, I'd like to see more behind the scenes from the sequel trilogy. There's quite a bit. The fact, I mean, as difficult of a relationship as I have with The Last Jedi, I am very fond of the documentary that they put together, particularly the big piece that they did chronicling Rian Johnson's journey there, directing and writing the Last Jedi. It was really, really well done documentary. I don't feel like there was anything quite as comprehensive on The Force Awakens.
There was some good stuff for that. Yeah. Very similar, I think, too.
Well, I don't remember there sort of being this all-encompassing journey of the whole film on Force Awakens. It's been a long time. I haven't gone through that material.
You know, I think it's just there's so many different missing parts of that process.
Well,
because
yeah.
So many things got shelved and, you know, the door fell down on Harrison. Now, that is a bonus feature I'd like to see, is that door coming down on Harrison. And you know what happened when it came down on him? What he said? He was like, oh, McClunky! And his door's like, oh, yeah. McClunky. Yeah, McClunky. I remember McClunky. It's like something him and Harrison used to say all the time.
Right, right, right.
That's why it's so
McClunky.
Special.
See how much better that is?
You know, it's like when twins have that shared language.
Yes.
That's, you know, McClunky is one of, you know, that's between the shared language between a George Lucas and a Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that's
the,
so that.
When the door comes down on his leg, he screams in anguish, pain at the top of his lungs. Ow, McClunky!
Yeah, the problem is every time you say McClunky, you have to put a quarter in the jar. You know, the McClunky jar. Yeah, the McClunky jar. Yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, about the sequel trilogy in general. We know that it is replete with off-screen drama. We know that the Bob Iger book does sort of open the kimono a bit on behind the scenes going into the Force Awakens. But we knew that we would never see the real story behind that, the real story behind Rogue One, the real story behind, Rise of Skywalker is a whole other issue. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think any of the bonus features have been announced for the Rise of Skywalker home video release. I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of documentary or a commentary. Although we've pointed out that J.J.'s film commentaries, Jim, you can sum those up.
They're so fluffy. All he does is just heap mad praise on his cast and crew.
Ah, what a monster.
It's fine, but is it entertaining?
Not really.
I want to be entertained.
Not
and,
really.
You've never
tasted corn dogs quite like the ones that were served by the great Mary Barnes.
Mary Barnes, listen, let me tell you something, Swag. For number one, Mary Barnes does make a damn good corn dog, so just be careful. Tread carefully right now. And number two, it gets tiresome just to hear effusive praise when you're really looking for insight into the story and the filmmaking process.
Yeah.
It's not an award show speech you're making here, JJ. I get it. You want to spread the wealth. He's very much
like
that.
He's a gracious, gracious guy. I think he really is.
Extremely so.
Yeah.
And he has a reputation as being someone who's, you know, he's a straight shooter and he has an open ear. And, you know, he's very much a people person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe too much so. I think he's getting high off his own supply sometimes.
You think so?
As far as being a people person.
I don't know. I think the guy just reeks of sincerity. I really do.
Yes, yeah. That's all part of the part of the package.
But I don't know that we're ever going to see as in-depth of behind the scenes as that we saw with the Lucasfilms.
Never.
Because the it was a lot messier. These sequel films were a lot messier in terms of the creative process.
And there was a lot more TLC involved with those Lucas productions because George himself was very keen, you know, as a guy who has the heart of a documentarian himself, he's very keen on preserving the process of his creative process and the creative process of his company. He was always very keen on that. That was a priority for George. I don't know how much of a priority that necessarily is for filmmakers of today because it's so commonplace to have these these crews around.
That's right. You hire a company that comes in and they shoot a document. In fact, that was one of George's first big gigs, right? Didn't he do the George was the director of the documentary that covered the making of Apocalypse Now, right?
No, because that was being made after George had started up Lucasfilm and moved on to his own company. But he did.
Oh, no.
Segue.
Finian's Rainbow.
Yet,
Finian's yes. Rainbow is the documentary.
The Coppola film, yes. When he hooked up with Zoetrope, American Zoetrope, and that was one of the things he did. But back then,
that was new. Nobody was covering the making of a film quite like that.
Not that I'm aware of necessarily. And, it's because these guys were filmmakers. It's what they did. And I just think that there was always a camera prevalent whenever they were anywhere.
It was Fred Astaire's last movie. I think everyone knew that was going to be his swan song on the silver screen. I think Coppola wanted that. And just to your point, those guys were the first ones to say, we're artists in and of ourselves. It's not just about the people that you see on the screen. There's an art that's going on behind the camera. So why don't we shed some light on that and show our struggle?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. We'll have somebody sitting in the audience who's like an expert on the history of behind the scenes making of film.
Finian's Rainbow fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like there's many of those. Somebody will come at us and say, well, when John Ford did The Searchers, he had a documentary crew with him. Okay, whatever. But in the modern era of filmmaking,
right?
With the then at that time those guys were the young guns, and they were the new wave of filmmaking, and I think that they took that role pretty damn seriously, and I think they were pretty proud of the accomplishments they achieved as youthful filmmakers. So much so that they wanted to preserve that whole process for history.
Yeah.
I think it was like Fred Astaire's last film.
Yeah, it was. It was Fred Astaire's last movie. You had Petula Clark in there. And it was, but I remember reading in the various George Lucas biographies that was something he did because Coppola directed it. And I think he hired George to come in and shoot the behind the scenes stuff going on.
Right. And, I said he segued into American Zoetrope. I don't think that's a very true statement because Ford and Coppola, Ford.
Got Harrison on the mic.
John Ford, the director The Searchers. Uh-huh. No. Lucas and Coppola both founded American Zoetrope together. Right. So, but George segued into filmmaking via Francis Ford Coppola and that specific film production. I believe the first thing that really bonded them together as filmmakers is the fact they both had beards. I've heard Walter Murch talk about this. Is that they was like, oh, he's got a beard. there's like kind of something that broke the ice between the two of them because I guess beards weren't very prevalent on the film sets back then as much as they would be later in the decade. Interesting stuff about George and how he got into it all. But as far as them bringing it back for the sequels, I think they're doing the best that they can do.
There's a lot more control. I mean, you look at the fact
there's
that
so much control.
Yeah, the art of book for Rise of Skywalker being delayed. JJ, having amnesia about the interviews that he may or may not have given. But someone's going to come along and write this whole story. This story is just begging to be. I think about the. Movies like, do you remember there was a made-for-TV movie about the late-night wars where Letterman versus Jay Leno and Carson on his way out and all of that. This whole story of Disney acquiring Lucasfilm and George being pushed out and some of the meetings that you read about in the Bob Iger book. I want to see a movie about this. I want to see a bad made-for-TV movie. About the rise and fall of George Lucas or something like that. I don't know.
The Disney company is so powerful nowadays.
I know.
Who's going to want to take them on and put their own career at risk by speaking poorly about the Disney company.
Well, you know, who might be willing to do something like that would be Michael Kaminsky, the writer of The Secret History of Star Wars, which, yes, by the way, if you haven't had a chance to read that book, there's a, we've talked about it on the show before, there's an audiobook version of it, and it's narrated by Robert Thompson.
Josh. Robert Thompson.
Josh Robert Thompson, who does
We're big fans of his.
Oh, my God. He does the absolute best George Lucas you can imagine. That's just a little taste. But he not only does he imitate George Lucas, but Francis Coppola and Gary Kurtz and, you know, all of these great Star Wars figures. But it's an incredible book, and it's just based on a ton of research. And if you really want to go way under the hood, behind the scenes of the making of Star Wars, warts and all, you got to check it out, Secret History of Star Wars. But I think I'd like to see Michael Kaminsky. So if he's listening to this show, I challenge him to spend the next 10 years of his life, right? Whatever. But no, I think it would be amazing if he would actually try to do what he did for the for the sequel trilogy. Now, the whole story.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very entertaining book, and his research really, to me, it's the most comprehensive history of Star Wars ever done. Now, it lacks a lot of the insider access that a J.W. Rinzer would have in the making of his books. But his books, I mean, that's more about the making of the films themselves, not really about all of the things that, like, fell through the cracks along the way, or controversies, or anything like that.
Well, it's going to be more of that official telling.
Yeah, right, because, a fish.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, JW has access to all the old photographs and interviews and concept art and location schedules and all of that stuff, all that history of Star Wars. This is different. This is a history that is compiled out of news reports, interviews, all sort of public accessible content that's already out there. And tells the story. It tells the story, which is really the best thing about the book, is that it makes it all flow. The whole history of Star Wars, it makes it all just flow like a one, you know, beautiful tapestry of time. As opposed to, you know, now there are other books that do gather up a lot of historical documentation regarding the making of Star Wars, but it's sort of placed on the page. It doesn't all come together like one big story.
Right.
This book does.
And like anything else, you know, if you're going to take a deep dive into whether it be the Civil War or the Revolution or anything like that, you got to have multiple sources to get the full story. And but you would be really, really remiss if you didn't include Michael Kaminsky's work on the making of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's just a fun read too. You'll
and a great it. And a great listen.
Yeah, and a great listen with Josh Robert Thompson doing all the voices. Of course, he's our favorite George Lucas impersonator. We do have an in-house impersonator in Jason Swank, who is
I don't hold a candle. I just
and in my George Lucas impersonation is like he's like insane. You know, it's like, what do you want? Get out of here.
Jim does the best, like, crazy, angry George Lucas.
Yeah. I do George on the Rampage. Right. That's my favorite one, you know. It's all done out of love. And
that's right.
You know, Josh Robert Thompson, you know, there's comedy involved and stuff, but I don't think he crosses the line and gets unnecessarily mean. I think he tries to stay legitimately authentic to his depiction of George Lucas, you know. I think he's striving for authenticity. And so, happily, we're able to say that coming up in Star Wars and pop culture in just a few, we're going to be spotlighting Josh Robert Thompson's latest George Lucas video for Collider. It's a deepfake video George Lucas Goes to Vegas, baby. And it's hilarious. There's some funny sound drops in there, too. So. But I'm sure Jason's going to be peppering the rest of the show with various little quick hits.
I'm obsessed with the Josh Robert Thompson, George Lucas. I was binging on. You're the one that texted the latest videos to me over the weekend, and I couldn't stop watching them and listening and laughing and...
They're brilliant.
They're so good. They're so good. But thanks, Gary from Phoenix, for the voicemail. We'll hopefully drop some more voicemails in throughout the show. But hey, let's get to the news because there's things we need to be talking about.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer. I have good news.
All right, George Lucas. I got George on the brain. Harrison Ford. Going around talking about Call of the Wild, and of course, whenever a big legend like Harrison Ford makes his way on the talk show circuit, of course, the questions are going to include talk about Star Wars, and his recent appearance on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show is no exception. And Jim, this is the first time I think that Harrison actually publicly spoke about his cameo. I think we can accurately call it a cameo as Han Solo in Rise of Skywalker.
I don't call it a cameo.
No?
I said he appeared as Han Solo.
All right. No cameo.
That's all you need. Okay. He appeared as Han Solo. It's all one big movie to me, my friend.
All right.
And he was just there for his next scene. And so Harrison, but you're right. He broke his silence about showing up in The Rise of Skywalker. Obviously, they wanted to keep it a big secret. You know, you and me, we didn't know. We were both surprised. I mean, there'd been those rumors and there'd been whispers and rumblings, but it was never really officially confirmed. Through mass publication or publicity or anything like that. So it was a big surprise on opening night when we saw Han. Hey, kid. Oh, I love that moment.
Yeah,
that
it's so great. Yeah, it's great.
Flippin' love
it. I got to tell you, I feel bad for people that are just not having fun with this movie.
Yeah, it is kind of rough.
People are so heartbroken over it. And, it has its flaws. But this one, like we keep saying, we're just having fun with this one.
Jason,
it's a fun ride.
Before we get into the Harrison Ford, let me just talk to you about a conversation I had yesterday with my friend Tommy over at the Galloping Ghost Arcade on Ogden Avenue.
All right.
Everyone knows I hang there all the time. And so I was talking to Tommy Waffles over there, and he's a good friend of mine. And
Tommy Waffles? What are you in, Goodfellas? Was he a Dick Tracy villain? Tommy Waffles.
This is Chicago,
So I'm talking to Tommy Waffles,
Me and Tommy Waffles, we had a sit down.
All right, I got to ask, why is he Tommy Waffles? Why Waffles?
Well, see, this is a video game community, and so that's some sort of gamer tag for him.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
all
so
right,
there
I
is
see.
A...
All right. A, it's not a mob
method
thing.
To the madness.
All right.
Tommy's a wonderful guy.
I mean, I'm sure he is.
He's one of the top arcade video game experts in the world. And so I was talking to him, and right away, what do you think about Mandalorian? Loved it. And then Rise of Skywalker came out. And I could tell. I'm like, uh-oh. And he goes, what did you think of it? I said, well, what did you think of it? And he goes, well, I saw it the first time, and then I went back to see it the second time. And both times I walked out feeling like it completely unravels everything that happened in Return of the Jedi. And I said, how so? And he goes, it took the entire story from the first six movies and completely and undid it. And I said, well, what do you think the whole story is from the first six movies? And he said, Darth Vader defeating the Emperor. And I said, is that the whole point of those movies? Is it? And he looked at me. He's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, I look at the original trilogy as the story of a son who is looking to redeem his father. And in the process, the father saves the son and the Jedi. The episode six is called Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called Destroy All Evil. It was called Return of the Jedi. Now, the problem is the introduction of the Chosen One concept in the prequels.
Yeah.
Of course, never a thought on anyone's mind for the first 22 years Star Wars was in existence. But now all of a sudden, it's this Chosen One concept where the idea of Anakin being this Messiah who is going to destroy the Sith is something that the Jedi believe in, right?
Yeah.
But it's also something that Yoda said might have been misinterpreted.
Misread.
And it's also something that only the Jedi believe in. You think anybody asked Palpatine what he thought of the Chosen One? I don't think he was really buying the whole concept. I don't think any Sith Lord believed in that kind of thing. I don't think there's a reality to it. It was a prophecy, pure and simple. Mm-hmm. It was a prophecy. Mm-hmm. And did Anakin fulfill the prophecy? I say yes, 1,000 times yes, from a certain point of view, because he saved the Jedi. If he let Palpatine kill Luke Skywalker without acting at that moment, then the Jedi would have been no more. The Sith would have extended their suffocating oppression of the galaxy. And by the time Rey rolls around in the picture, it would have been way too late.
It would have been called the end of the Jedi, not the return of the Jedi.
Darth Vader saved the Jedi, and his son brought him back into the light before he perished.
Mm-hmm.
He also did take evil out of the picture for a little while, at least. So with the return of Palpatine, it's frustrating because there's no rhyme or reason for it. But when you remember Ming Never Dies, thank
right.
you, Paul Bateman, for making that echo through my head for every time I try to think about, like you said, Jason, people who aren't having fun with this movie,
right.
like Billy Mack, you know,
yeah.
surprising.
Yeah.
Billy, you know, like me and him seen eye to eye on Star Wars since he was 4 years old and I was eight. Maybe he was five, I don't know. But we always saw eye to eye on Star Wars. And for us to have such vastly different opinions of this movie, yeah, man, it gives me a lot of food for thought. And I wish there would have been some more explanation for Palpatine returning.
Well, can I interject here real quick? This was speaking of Paul Bateman. He sent us this little gem. This is from Twitter, and Elijah Wood posted this. This is pretty good, and it sums up, I think, a lot of people's issues with not just The Rise of Skywalker, but the sequel trilogy. So this is a tweet from Star Wars Holocron.
What is that?
It's not an official. There's no.
No, it's just like a Twitter
handle. Yeah, it's a Twitter handle.
Like
right.
to
yeah.
put out Star Wars trivia and facts
right.
and things like that. That's fun.
So Star Wars Holocron says, did you know? Did you know? The Sith Eternal Fleet, seen in hashtag Star Wars, hashtag The Rise of Skywalker, was created by Sith cultists on Exegol, who indoctrinated Exegol's population with Sith values and raised and trained their children to become officers, mechanics, and soldiers of the Final Order? Did you know?
Now, see, I knew that because I have a copy of the Star Wars Illustrated Guide or whatever it's called. I have the guide, so I knew that.
The Illustrated Guide. So Elijah Wood, great actor, of course, Frodo Baggins. He tweeted back,
mm-hmm.
No, how could we have known?
No, how could we have known? Yeah, of course, it wasn't in the movie.
Right.
This is the nightmare Jason hates, is that you have to read this ancillary material, this supplemental stuff to understand the full movie.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I mean, as far as Star Wars fans, we love to dig for the deeper information and everything, but my God, were some big pieces of storytelling left off the table in Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
Friends, please don't start calling me a hater or anything. I love that movie. I adore that movie. And I almost want to encapsulate the six times I've seen that movie and just keep it there in that place. So I always have those feelings locked into where they are. Because let's face it, for the most part, when you see a movie, the first time you see it, you're pretty much one and done with it. You forge an opinion about it. You think about it for a while. You might talk about it or debate it with some friends or some people online or around the water cooler or whatever. But you only go to see it once.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have a little bit of interest, you might read an article about it here or there or take a look at some of the bonus features on the Blu-ray. But for the most part, you're one and done with a movie. You take in the story and you process it through your mind, you know, and feelings and thoughts and emotions and all that stuff. That's a great experience of the cinema. Star Wars is different, though. You can see a Star Wars movie 10 times. And then on the 11th time, all of a sudden, every opinion you ever had of it changes. So, I want to maintain my pure connection to The Rise of Skywalker and not have it flip the coin on me, kind of like the way The Last Jedi unfortunately did, which took all of the fun out of that movie experience away from me. Even if I want to have it now, I can't.
Yeah,
stripped away, and not by the movie itself, but by all the supplemental stuff around it. So you see, you know, Star Wars films, the film experience is more than just the movie itself. It always has been. It's so much more than just going to the movie theater, buying your ticket, sitting down and watching a movie, then walking. It's not that disposable. It sticks to us like glue.
Yeah,
like a flipping virus. Sometimes it sticks to us, but it's going to be there, and we have to go through an evolutionary process with how we feel and think about it on a critical level.
Oh, it's got to settle. It takes a lot of time to settle. I mean, this movie is still settling with me, but I'm enjoying the process. I'm enjoying the settling and looking very much forward to the official home video release of it.
And, well, the novelization is what I'm really going for. That's going to have your big info, I hope. There was an excerpt that was posted up on StarWars.com earlier this week, and I read it, and it seemed to flow pretty well. It was featuring the very first sequence of the film when Kylo goes to Mustafar and fights with those native cultists to acquire the Wayfinder. But it's an extended scene, and it features a character known as the people have been referring to the character as the Oracle in early rumors about the film. There was this creature that Kylo would encounter called the Oracle, who would guide him to where the Wayfinder is after he massacred all those.
Well, this was the Sith, the ancient Sith character, right?
Not Torvalum, though.
No.
This is a different one. Yeah, it just makes a brief appearance at the beginning of the movie. Seeker of the Well or something like that. I forget what the heck they called that thing. But it was a character that had like this symbiotic relationship with a spider stuck to his head and on part of his neck and everything.
Oh, the big spider. Like,
he couldn't see. The spider would see for him. It was a really bizarre concept. And but this guy appears in the book. And so I saw people online referring to him as the Oracle. Look, the Oracle! But they don't call it the Oracle in this thing. But so it's little tidbits like that that are going to expand our knowledge of the story and maybe fill in a few cracks for some of the people who, like Tommy Waffles, are having trouble putting it all together.
Oh, when I told this to
Tommy and I told him to think about what the original Star Wars films truly are about and to boil it all down to the story of a family, then he kind of seemed to warm up to that idea. And I could tell that the wheels were kind of churning upstairs. The gears were in motion. He was thinking really long and hard about it. So, I have a lot of takes on this film. And, of course I see everyone and hear everyone's complaints about it. Sometimes I just like, what? I mean, did they even see the same movie I saw? What do they want? Don't they want to be entertained? I mean, these Star Wars stories grow over time. I certainly didn't look at A New Hope 22 years later after it was released the same way once The Phantom Menace came out. I mean, there are always just elements that add more to the story and keep this story evolving and moving, even though the Skywalker saga is said to be, you know, done with, I think there's still going to be comic books and novels and all kind of fun things that will maybe promote, you know, provide a little more color to our analysis of this film, and maybe we won't look at it so much on surface level as I fear a lot of people have been doing. And then there's that whole War of the Raylo situation, which I can't.
That's still going on, by the way. It's all over online.
That's out of my. That's totally out of my pay grade. The War of the Raylos.
It's just a sewer. All the back and forth on Twitter and all that is just. It's just a sewer. I'm tired of. I don't have the patience. I don't have the time, and I don't have the desire. Right. To wade through all of that.
It's a lot of
I just
static.
Don't care.
But I'll tell you what isn't white noise and static is Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes,
live.
Let's get to that. Jimmy Kimmel.
Especially when Harrison Ford makes an appearance. So here he is. He's finally talking about his big appearance in The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
Last time you were here.
It's old news.
Or maybe it was the time before. I don't remember. You were almost pleading with the Star Wars people to kill Han Solo. You had enough of Han Solo. You wanted him dead. And then
you're putting a different complexion on it. I figured that his utility had been exhausted,
mm-hmm.
bled out,
mm-hmm.
and I was I was willing to die for the cause.
The cause. Well, I didn't realize it was
bring some gravitas, some base.
And you did indeed die for the cause. And
I
yet,
did.
Then we well, go to see
and then,
the new movie.
You know, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Jesus, Han Solo rose again.
Not like Jesus.
Maybe a little less dramatically than Jesus, but and it took more time than it took Jesus, but it's still like Jesus.
Yes, Han Solo just like Jesus.
It's like not like Jesus, yeah. Kimmel.
You're gonna get me in trouble.
You're crossing a line here with some real sacrilegious stuff, okay, pal?
It's obvious that Harrison feels he always is having a good time when he's on Jimmy Kimmel. There's something about Kimmel that brings out the playful side of Harrison, but. Nothing's really new here. He says that he's always been on record as saying that he thought that the Han Solo character was rather shallow and didn't, as written on the page, didn't offer a whole lot. And so this was an opportunity for him to contribute to the cause. I've never subscribed to Harrison's analysis of the Han Solo character. I thought he was... much more important and much more integral to the story than he wanted to let on. But as an actor, he's approaching the character in a very different way. He's not emotional or sentimental about the character like we are.
He's saying, looking at it as a job,
as a job,
a role, as something,
right.
You know, what kind of enjoyment does he get out of playing it? Does it really connect with him? Obviously, when the role of Han Solo became available to him in the mid-70s, he needed the job.
Yes.
He was working as a carpenter on the side. He needed the money, and he needed to establish himself in Hollywood and would have taken any big role that would have come his way. He couldn't afford to be picky back in 1975.
Right.
But... after Star Wars becomes a big hit and he starts seeing some real serious scripts with some real seriously meaty roles for him in it, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden Han Solo doesn't look that cool anymore.
Right.
Sad, but true. Harrison has no connection to the Star Wars story. He doesn't understand it. He's not into fantasy.
Right.
He's not into science fiction.
Very
He's
different
not into
from
comic
Mark,
books.
From
he
Mark
doesn't
Hamill.
Like any of that crap.
Right. If you want an actor that understands you on that level, then you need to go to Mark. Mark Hamill understands that world. Harrison does not.
And so Mark became more invested in it as an actual fan. As far as Star Wars goes, he liked it. He was interested. He wanted to know more about the story, and he really wanted to flesh it out with George, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Harrison was just like, oh, just give me my lines, and I'll rehearse them, and then I'll show up, and I'll read them, and then I'll take Carrie Fisher and go back into the closet for about half an hour. But... Hooray for Hollywood. So, but Harrison just, he did a recent interview with, I think it was USA Today, when they asked him, hey, when Han showed up in The Rise of Skywalker, was he a Force ghost? And Harrison told the reporter to turn off the tape recorder because he said, listen, I don't know. I don't care. I don't give a crap about that stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
You know, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
There is no audio recording that I've come across thus far. It was a print interview thing. But, yeah, he was asked about being a Force ghost, and he's, you know, of course, I am paraphrasing for him, but it was something along those lines. Turn off that tape recorder. I don't know, and I don't care. Or I think he said, like, you might want to turn off that tape recorder.
Yeah, I think the I'm looking here. Here's a headline. I have great no headline.
effing
idea what a Force ghost is, says
I don't know.
Harrison
Force
Ford.
Ghost. I don't know. You know, I show up. I give me my lines. I read my lines. And I go home. He doesn't care. He really doesn't. Yeah. He gets uncomfortable, I think, when he gets pressured into situations where he has to talk about specific points of Star Wars knowledge or mythology. I think that makes Harrison very uncomfortable. And he doesn't want to do the research because he doesn't feel naturally attracted to that brand of entertainment.
Right. It's not his thing. It's not his thing. And that's okay. Although I will say that in the lead up to The Force Awakens, and he went out and, you know, he showed up at Star Wars Celebration. I think that what he does embrace, maybe not understands, but I think what he does embrace is that there is now multiple generations of people who have an appreciation and a fondness for this story, and he's playing a role in it, and he's happy to have some part of this legacy. I think that he gets it on that level.
Yeah.
Parents sharing it with their children or their grandchildren. And that's what came across to me when he was out promoting Force Awakens. With
yes.
Rise of Skywalker, he didn't do the, for obvious reasons, it was a secret. He didn't do the PR rounds. He's out promoting a different movie. They're asking about it. Okay. He's moved on. But I do think that his exposure to fandom through San Diego Comic-Con, his first appearance at San Diego Comic-Con, when he was promoting the movie with Daniel Craig, the Cowboys versus Aliens, that was his first real exposure to fandom. I think he was legitimately touched by the feelings that were coming towards him by the fans. He's more nostalgic. I think he's more open to it.
Here's what I know about Harrison Ford. And I mean, this has to be true with any actor in Hollywood who is still getting good roles in their 70s, mid-70s, like Harrison is. He just wants to work. Harrison Ford is a workhorse. He wants to be in front of the camera. He's an actor. That's what he does. That's his profession. And he wants to continue contributing to the industry. That's what makes him feel great. And he knows, he doesn't lie to himself. He knows that he feels very lucky to be in a situation where he can still accept leading man roles in films as he is in his mid-70s. I've heard Harrison talk about this in the past, and I think that was one of his main motivations to accept the role of Han Solo, to return to it. A lot of people were saying, well, Harrison will never do it. And a lot of people also think that the only reason Han Solo was killed off in The Force Awakens is because Harrison demanded it. He said, the only reason I'll come back to the role is if you kill him off. I am not 100% convinced that that's the truth. I think Harrison Ford is a working man's actor, and he is working, and he wants to keep working. And if they offered him a role as Han Solo in all three films of the trilogy, I firmly believe he would have taken them up on it. Now, they did kill him off, and I don't think Harrison was necessarily upset about that so much because it's a concept that he had been floating up the flagpole for a while. He wanted, as we heard in that clip from earlier where he was talking about his well-known desire to kill off Han. He gave some reasons why. He felt like the character was spent and deserved to go out with a big bang that would really add to his character post-mortem. But nowadays, JJ has to ask. And that's pretty much all that it takes to get Harrison back. He talks about this with Jimmy Kimmel, how he was enticed back into the role.
How did that happen? Who convinced you to do that? Because I would imagine it would take some convincing.
JJ said, this is a good idea.
Uh-huh.
I, JJ, have decided that this is a good idea.
Uh-huh.
And I would like you to do it.
And you trust him enough that when he says something like that, you're on board?
Don't you?
Well, yes, I do. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But I'm, you know, I'm not Harrison Ford. Quite a distance from it. Yeah.
I'm actually not either.
You're not? Guillermo, remove this man.
Guillermo, remove this man. But, I mean, that's Harrison, you know, very uncomfortable with his celebrity status.
Yeah.
More than happy to own all the houses and airplanes that he has, but still uncomfortable with his celebrity status. And when Jimmy Kimmel says, "You're Harrison Ford," he says, you know, he even kind of laughs at the facade of celebrity that surrounds
sure.
him.
Yeah, well, it's very much like in Force Awakens.
This is a Millennium Falcon. You're Han Solo.
I used to be.
I used to be.
I used to be.
Yeah.
Now I'm Ron Blolo.
Like Jake Skywalker. Okay, but so we've talked a little bit about Harrison,
yeah.
how he keeps the Star Wars story and mythology and finer points of the plot. He keeps that at arm's length. He doesn't understand it, doesn't even want to try to, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he does very seriously take ownership of the roles that he's made famous throughout his career, roles like Indiana Jones and, of course, Han Solo. And so Harrison appeared on CBS Sunday Morning earlier this week, and he sat down with Lee Cowan, and they talked about Harrison returning to familiar roles like Han in Indy. And
Blade Runner.
And yes, Blade Runner's a perfect example. And so Harrison talks a little bit about that with CBS Sunday Morning.
When you return to roles, whether it's Han Solo or Indiana Jones, what's the challenge for you in coming back to the same role years later?
I'm trying not to look silly, you know, and running around in tight pants and high boots. And I'll give you a more appropriate answer, considering that I'm going to start doing Indiana Jones in about 2 months.
Yeah,
I'm always delighted to come back to these characters. You know, we have the opportunity to make another is because people have enjoyed them. I feel obliged to make sure that our efforts are as ambitious as they were when we started. You have a sense of responsibility to your customers. I think of the people that go to my movies as more as customers than I do as fans. Fans feels kind of weird to me, but always has.
Always has.
But the fact that these people support my business, and I'm responsible to them for the quality of the service that I offer.
He just, like I said, this is a working man right here.
Yeah.
He's not some fancy, pampered Hollywood celebrity. This is Harrison Ford. He's a working man. His job site just happens to be on the movie theater screens, you know, but he approaches it with such pure...
He's a blue-collar actor.
He's a blue-collar actor, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He you know, provides a service for his customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's mm-hmm. so much that so many people who are in charge of Star Wars could take out of Harrison Ford's commentary right there and go to school and listen because Harrison has the right approach, and maybe that's why he is still getting those leading man roles at age 77 after all the decades he spent in the movies. Yeah. It has more to do with than his acting chops and his versatility. It has to do with what he's got going on upstairs. You know,
that's right.
There's a lot of great actors out there in the world, but how many are going to be an A-list actor all the way into their 70s? Not too many. There's only, you know, they all have the good acting chops. They all have the knowledge of cinema and the knowledge of theater, but what separates them all? What separates the greatest from the rest of the pack? It's what's going on upstairs.
That makes
Harrison Ford.
He's one of the last great actual movie stars, I think. Now he would never categorize himself as this, but I put him in the same category as Humphrey Bogart, James Cagney, Clark Gable, Harrison Ford.
Wow,
I think so.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, I put him more in a category of a Steve McQueen, you know.
Yeah.
John Wayne. Almost.
Yes,
John Wayne.
Yes, but I look at those guys.
The guys who didn't sacrifice their essence to become a famous movie star. They held on to the stuff that made them who they are.
Yeah, but I would say Cagney and Bogart and Clark Gable were very much like that.
I know, but they come off to me as more of your classic era of the golden age of Hollywood. And it just seemed like the lifestyle was more insular back then, you know, like you wouldn't have, I might be speaking out of school here because I don't know anything about Humphrey Bogart or what kind of man he was or James Cagney, you know, outside of his film roles, but they don't seem like the type of guys who fly their own helicopters to Wyoming to, you know, build a log cabin or something like Harrison Ford does, you know? I mean, he's...
Yeah, yeah. In the case of Cagney was a boxer that, because he was good on his feet, was able to fall into dancing because he needed a job. He needed to support his family. So he took
good
a
footwork.
Role. Yeah, he took a role. Yeah, he had good footwork as a boxer. Good so footwork. He got some work in the chorus of a Broadway show. Just went to the cattle call. It was like just any other job.
Yeah, but see, like, you know, and Harrison, of course, was part of that rat race of Hollywood, you know.
Harrison came into Hollywood at the time that the whole studio system was starting to fall apart.
Yeah.
You know,
it was
were all
Hollywood.
Independent actors, you know. Harrison, you could work for any studio, whereas back in the day, studios signed you and you could only make movies for Paramount or MGM or, you know, whatever the studio was at the time.
So going back to the question that was posed to Harrison in that print interview earlier, was Han Solo a force ghost in The Rise of Skywalker? I just, you know, before we move forward, I want to know, what do you think about that? What about Han Solo appearing to Kylo? What was that all about? What do you think it was? Was he a force ghost?
No, I don't believe he was a force ghost. What I believe he was is a memory. I can't say that the Force wasn't involved, but you know, Luke Skywalker says to Kylo Ren in The Last Jedi, and he said, you know, I'll always be with you, just like your father.
Yes.
And you also hear Snoke telling Kylo Ren that the deed of slaying Han Solo has split him to the core. So he's still wrestling with this. I'm willing to go so far as to say that Leia, who we know was lending her metaphysical support to her son at that particular time, that he had that vision, I'm willing to go so far as to say that she could have, you know, appeared as Han Solo to her son or somehow caused that to happen. But as far as him being a force ghost, I don't, no, not in the purest sense.
Right.
But now, Yoda does say, through the Force, other places you will see old friends long gone. So he does say that. And, of course, we know now that he's referring to old friends long gone like Qui-Gon Jinn that he...
Right.
But, you know, maybe there's a larger view to this that the Force enables you to see not just Force-sensitive beings after they've passed on. But
well, I'm so glad you referenced that quote from Yoda about the old friends long gone and placed it in connection to this discussion about Han Solo returning. I find that... just perfect. Just perfect to reference that quote. I also believe he was a Force vision, and it was a vision that was triggered by Leia through the Force. And for her to be able to break through time and space and have that effect on Kylo in such a way where he actually is able to experience a meeting with his murdered father and atone for his sins. For Leia to put herself out like that was extending herself into the Force in a very similar way that Luke did at the end of The Last Jedi. And by doing so, it sucked the life right out of him to be able to pull off those feats of crossing massive space and time to affect a situation that's happening on the other side of the galaxy. Now, for Kylo and Rey to have that connection where they could also reach out across time and space and be there physically with each other, that's a different thing, though, because together with that dyad, they're supposed to be one. Now, the thing with the Force dyad that I'm confused about is Snoke was taking credit for bonding Rey and Kylo.
Yes. Yes, he was.
So he was taking credit for that. How? And if he's an extension of Palpatine's will, then wouldn't Palpatine be the one who
absolutely doing that? Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, it turns out that maybe neither of them were doing it. It was just the Force connection between the two individuals, Kylo and Rey. And that maybe only like these Darksiders were able to flip the switch on, but they weren't able to really control it nor be responsible for it.
Yeah.
I'm having a tough one with that.
Yeah. No, I truly believe what I have done in my own mind, in my own canon, is I've just completely replaced Snoke with Palpatine. So when I think about when I remind myself anytime I'm thinking about something that Snoke has done,
right,
I just replace it with Palpatine.
Yes.
And so, yeah. So Palpatine is using his ability to put these two together and kind of see what happens. I mean, we've seen him do this countless times, or, you know, multiple times. We saw him do it with Dooku and Anakin. We saw him do it with Vader and Luke, you know, putting these two gladiators together and see who rises to the top. I definitely think that it's cruel manipulation. But, you know, Kylo says in episode 8, he said, you know, how are you doing this? Just doing it would kill you. You know, just the energy that it would take to do this would kill you. So I definitely think that that Palpatine's manipulating the whole thing. It turns out to actually not work in his favor. But I do think he's the one that's bridging the gap between them.
Hmm. Okay, so let me ask you this. Why did Palpatine then want Rey dead? At the beginning of The Rise of Skywalker, he wants her dead. That part I don't understand. If he is convinced, then by putting the two of them together, it'll give him the life force he needs to bring himself back.
Well, I don't think he knows.
The dyad thing
he didn't know. He did not know
that. It was a mystery to Palpatine.
Right, that was a mystery to Palpatine.
So with Snoke then taking credit for it, maybe Snoke was messing with Palpatine.
I think you have to keep in mind that Kylo never completed his journey to the dark side. Even after killing his own father, his journey to the dark side was not complete. And so I think that was Palpatine's initial goal, was to have the Skywalker that he always wanted to have. I think that if he couldn't have Anakin and he couldn't have Luke, then he was going to have the third best thing, which was Ben Solo, Kylo Ren. However, he also had this loose end out there in the form of his granddaughter. And he had to see what was going on with that. Was this something that was going to somehow upset his plan? And then I think the further he got along with sort of tracking her, she intercepted. I think it was all part of the will of the Force. She intercepted his plans, fell into the situation as it was unfolding. He realized that she was perhaps a better horse to back. Playing the two against each other.
Right. How about this one?
Mm-hmm.
After Snoke was killed,
yes.
Why did they keep boiling new Snokes on Exegol? Like, what, was he just going to show back up again? I mean, Palpatine was ready to make his appearance known. He sent out that broadcast message right before the events of the film.
So why were there still Snoke body parts hanging out on Exegol?
Maybe he was looking to transfer himself into a Snoke.
No, I, you know what? I
see how that could be possible.
I think that, yeah, because you're right. This is a year later. We're talking about at least a year.
And they still got some Snokes are brewing. So I was just wondering what's the purpose of that? Maybe it's just like a hobby, craft brew, craft beer.
I don't think there's, other than the cleaning ladies not doing what they're supposed to do, I don't think there's any in-universe explanation. I think it's all about giving audiences the visual cue.
Well, sometimes a movie,
the visual cue,
is just a movie using the film as a medium to tell a story.
What? And
quite honestly,
that's crazy.
It doesn't always have to. You don't always have to connect all the dots. Sometimes the medium tells the story in a way that just, like, okay, here's an example of how the medium is telling a story in The Rise of Skywalker.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
For J.J. to make us as an audience aware of the fact that the Knights of Ren have arrived on the planet Pasadena, he shows them with an establishing shot of them standing on a mesa in a circle doing their supervillain poses, right?
Oh, yeah.
People would look at that scene and they would say, so what, those guys travel all the way across space to get the Pasadena to stand on a big rock and pose, mm-hmm. But that's not what that sequence is all about. The only reason that we're seeing that is just to establish the fact that the Knights of Ren have arrived, and to do so in kind of a dynamic comic book sort of way.
Yes.
But there's no rhyme and reason for them to be standing up on that mesa and out there looking around, they could have just thrown in a simple piece of dialogue saying, oh, the Knights of Ren are here, alert. But what's cooler? I say give them the action pose up on top of the mesa.
Yeah.
Get the most you can out of the visual medium and use that to tell the story.
As Sigmund Freud said once, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Just a cigar, yeah.
So I think
sometimes a movie is just a movie.
Right, or a scene from a movie or a shot from a movie is just that.
Well, it's just there to establish a bit of knowledge for the audience.
When
the Knights of Ren are there now.
Without the visual of Snoke in the pickle jar, you would have just heard the line, I made Snoke.
Right.
Which you could interpret as, the only reason that guy achieved any success is because I made him. I helped him out. I literally made made him, not just helped his reputation and his career.
Yes, and we'll show you our vat of Snokes now.
Right.
So you get the gist of what's happening here.
Yeah.
So it's just another way to reinforce these story points with you via the visual medium of film.
Right.
And so that's why, sometimes when you start nitpicking this stuff, you're kind of forgetting what the medium is all about in the first place. It's not real life.
Now, had there been more cohesion between the films, that may not have been necessary because they would have taken the appropriate steps to set up the third film in the second film. But because the third film is so removed from The third film is so removed from the second film.
If they stuck with that Colin Trevorrow script, they would have had episode 9 that would pick up more of the pieces from The Last Jedi.
By the way, we're taking some flack about that, Trevorrow. Not a lot, but we're getting some flack from listeners saying, I can't believe you guys fell for that Trevorrow script. That's clearly a fake. It was just written by somebody in a...
No way. What do you think? Some nerd saw some concept art leaked online and 2 weeks later had a fully fleshed out and complete script?
Yeah.
Based on? No way. That's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's
leave it for computers. It's impossible.
I don't know. I bullseyed the script back home with my T-16.
So many people, though, are really mourning that as like, oh, that was the movie. We should have seen that movie. And it would have been interesting, but I don't think it's a better film.
Would have, like, at the very end, where you have Rose and Poe raising the children on the planet Modesta, or Modesto, and Rey walks up ready to train the kids. Well, Broom Boy is with them, remember?
Yeah.
And last week I talked about it. I made a bunch of jokes about Broom Boy without really fully analyzing that moment. And when I thought about it, I was like, oh, so they got Broom Boy there. So they are scooping up Force-sensitive kids in the galaxy and bringing them there to be trained. And by having just that simple character in that scene, it would fully justify the entire Canto Bight trip in The Last Jedi, because the trip would have results, and the results would be the discovery of Force-sensitive children being held in captivity on Canto Bight. So that sequence would have mattered.
Well, only if – you see, I think it only matters if it was more than just Broom Boy. Now, that would have been very interesting.
There are other children there, and maybe those other children came from the stables at Canto Bight.
That would have been very, very interesting, because it does seem, based on what we know in the version of Rise of Skywalker that we got with Janna's – What was the name of the group that she was
with?
Company 77, right? That they sort of clumped together. They found each other. All of a sudden, this entire garrison of troopers stood down and realized that they were force sensitive. Finn was, not one of them, but was also in a similar situation. So, yeah. So does the force somehow create circumstances that allows these people to find each other, or
are they
drawn together through the force?
Oh,
probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's been consistent through each and every Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. And that was a method of unfurling the whole story that George Lucas firmly believed in. One character would take you to the next character.
Yes, that's
so
right.
You would have, the droids taking you to Leia, then taking you to Luke, and the dominoes would fall that way. Yeah, and Ben and all that. So that's it. Was just little fine points about the Rise of Skywalker. These are the things I'm going to look forward to talking about here now for these next few months, especially as additional information about the plot gets revealed via the Blu-ray and novelization. So it's just fun to kind of talk and speculate and try to figure it out. But as Jason said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a movie is just a movie. So Harrison Ford also revealing on CBS This Morning he's returning to the role of Indiana Jones, and they plan to start shooting in 2 months.
2 months. Man, that's happening awfully fast. I wonder what role George is going to play in this.
Jason, I believe he's playing young Belloc. Young Belloc. No, of course not. Of course not. In actuality, no role whatsoever. George Lucas is not involved. He might be at the premiere and get a story and characters by credit, but he's not involved.
If he
is, it's in an unofficial capacity via, having lunch with Steven and talking about things or something, but he's not involved. He's not involved.
Because George's contribution to the last Indiana Jones film was the alien subplot. And rumors are that Spielberg was a little iffy on that, but George really...
I never heard put, that.
Yeah, I did. I heard that Spielberg was a little iffy on it. He thought that they needed to stick towards the religious backdrop.
Well, that's another movie that came out and really had a lukewarm, tepid reaction from the fan base. And I, you know, that's a an Indiana Jones movie I've only seen a couple times. I saw it in the theater with my family when it first came out, and then I saw it again after it came out on home video. And that when I saw it on home video, I was like, okay, let's see if this thing is as bad as people are all saying. Because I, you know, it's been a while since
I saw it.
And I sat down, and I don't really have any huge hangups with the movie. It's a little, it doesn't stand up to the quality of the original three, that's for sure. But I think it has to do with a bunch of factors. Most notably, it's placed in a different era in history, and Harrison Ford himself had aged so much. I say de-age these guys. Let's get back to their primes here. You know, I say de-age everyone, man. I mean, you know, Jason and I, of course, we're working overtime on our own de-aging technologies, but well, there you go, Jason.
Look at the wrinkles.
We're going to put those little dots all over your face because you're going to be mo-capped, pal. Yeah. You're going to be totally mo-cap swank. It's going to be great.
Mo-cap swank. What else we got? We've got...
do we have time for one more Harrison Ford?
We've got plenty of time. Yeah, let's do it. We've got more Harrison Ford.
All right, well, we'll burn through these last... couple clips here we have, and then we'll get into Star Wars and pop culture with George Lucas in Vegas. But Harrison Ford doing the media junkets to promote Call of the Wild. He sat down with a dude named Jake Hamilton, who I'm sure is a very highly connected Hollywood insider of some magnitude. He sat down with Harrison and asked Harrison about the famous scene from Empire Strikes Back, the I love you, I know.
I love you.
I know.
Think about what we were saying about how much distance Harrison keeps between himself and the lore. Think about what we were saying earlier about how Harrison Ford keeps the galaxy far, far away at arm's length, especially when it comes to specific details about the story. You'll hear it here, loud and clear.
I thought it was that there was a more fitting character line. Carrie Fisher's, I'm about to be frozen in kryptonite. You're familiar
there it is.
With the situation.
I am. Carbonite.
Carbonite. Kryptonite, carbonite. I just work here.
That's the truth.
The line was supposed to be, as I'm about to be frozen, Carrie, as Princess Leia, says to me, I love you. And I say, I know. Now that has character value to me. And there's a kind of edge to it as well. And the director and I both felt that was a kind of a good idea. So that's what we shot. And George was afraid, George Lucas, the producer of the film, was afraid that it might lead to a bad laugh, a laugh that was incongruous to the situation. But he agreed finally when he saw it that all put together, he agreed that it worked. So it's in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm frozen in kryptonite is in the movie.
Frozen in kryptonite.
Frozen kryptonite.
And he doesn't even know that he made that, you know.
Frozen in kryptonite.
Kryptonite carbonite.
I love that clip.
Frozen in kryptonite.
That's a great one.
You know, it is good. But, you know, that's something that we know happened famously on the set. It was improvised. We talked to actors like the late, great Peter Mayhew and Jeremy Bullock. We know that the conditions on the set of that particular scene, it was hot. The actors in costume particularly were getting really tired and
stormtroopers passing out because
it was not a fun set in that, at least in that experience. And they were doing take after take after take, and there was, I think the way it was originally scripted was, I love you, I'll be back.
Coming back. You just remember that because I'll be back.
That's right.
My name isn't Han Solo.
And he just didn't think that it that it worked. Now, I'd also had heard that...
Who wrote this? Kasdan?
that George wanted to... He attended a test screening. And that was when he saw that the audience didn't laugh in an ironic way, that he agreed to keep it in. But he did need to see that delivered in front of an audience before he agreed to let anyone change his.
Yeah, I think even after George saw it in front of an audience, he was still like, I don't know. I think he needed convincing even after that.
Oh, really?
It
became, my God, they got merchandise now with just that line. It's a whole cottage industry of I love you, I know merchandise.
Iconic.
Ooh. Super iconic.
All right. So that wraps up our Harrison Ford chunk of this week's show, I think.
Chunks of Harrison Ford.
we so rarely get to do a good solid chunk of Harrison's.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did. I'm glad that you know, we were able to do all that Harrison Ford content and put it all together in one nice big package.
Frozen in kryptonite.
All right. Speaking of Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Mm-hmm.
Actor Ben Schwartz appeared on Jimmy Kimmel Live. He was out there promoting this new Sonic film that just came out last weekend, and pretty successful
Ben
at the
Schwartz,
box office.
Yeah. It was all big,
see
big
what happens
stars in
when
that.
Produce,
Jim Carrey and
yeah. See what happens when creators actually listen to their fans.
What is the deal with
trying
that?
To subvert them?
What happened with that Sonic? I missed this. I mean, I know that there was a trailer that was released and fans said it looks ridiculous.
Well, they just didn't like how the main character looked.
Sonic.
They felt like the filmmakers took too many liberties with a classic Sonic. It basically comes down to the eyes. The eyes were small, more humanoid. Mm. Sonic, as we all know, has big, giant, cartoony eyes. He's, you know, and there were like elements of the character that were sorely missing from the earlier versions that were released publicly. And so fans spoke up and the producers came out and said, we appreciate you guys so much. We'll be making those changes for sure because we love our audience. We don't want to subvert your expectations and take you on some kind of twisted, weird, wild ride. We don't want to experiment on it. You know, as a fan, I don't want to be experimented on, okay? Thank you. I'm not some kind of mouse in a test lab running around on a wheel. But sometimes I think that's how they look at us. I mean, look at The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
To me, that looks like a film that the studio put out in the theaters, they counted their money, and they're just going to let it wither away. There's zero marketing via merchandise, toys, restaurant tie-ins, anything. And the film is still in the theaters.
Yep.
After it was released, you wouldn't see a commercial for that film after.
That is true. They did
zero
some
marketing push compared to your traditional Star Wars releases. There is no merchandise. There are no collectibles. There's nothing for The Rise of Skywalker. There are a handful of action figures. Didn't even get its own dedicated line. A first for Star Wars to have a film come out with no action figure line. And I'm so tired of hearing all the BS excuses. Oh, well, you know, kids' play habits are different in your 20 than where you were younger. Kids just don't collect toys. Bull crap. You know what happened? People used to say that same stuff about baseball cards in the early 80s. Oh, kids don't collect baseball cards. But you know what? You know who did? Adult collectors collected baseball cards in the early 80s. The trading cards companies all catered to the older collectors and created a multi-billion dollar industry doing it, okay? Which still thrives today for the most part. Why doesn't Star Wars wisen up and create an action figure line focused more toward the adult collector? They tease us every once in a while, acting like that's what they're doing or attempting to do. But at the end of the day, they all go, well, kids don't buy it. Well, you know why they don't buy it? It's because you can't get your damn product out on the pegs to begin with.
Well, that's true.
It sucks balls. And the other thing is, and don't tell me kids don't collect toys. Those Lego sets all fly off the shelves. Quit BSing us. And quit letting The Rise of Skywalker just wither away and without any sort of buzz or anything. They're just looking to bury it. They want a fresh start.
Yeah.
They want to turn over their fan base. They don't want to do things to appeal to adults.
They want youth, and they want us to go away. They want us to wither away on the vine, just like the Rise of Skywalker is doing. Screw that noise. Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
Well, I can tell you what, I've got a 7-year-old here in this house, and if I was able to take him to a toy store, and if he could see a rack of Mandalorian action figures, whether it be Queel, Mando, Kara, he would want every single one, not to mention Baby Yoda, for God's sake, but he would want every single one of them. If he saw a big end cap, yeah, everyone he would want. Even
Moff
that
Gideon, Cara Dune. Well, Cara Dune's out.
Yeah.
If you could find her, those are actually showing up at retail now. I have mine pre-ordered and it'll show up in the year 2022, I'm sure. on a bent card.
Yeah. You know what I did? I spent an hour last weekend going through all the big e-tailers, Entertainment Earth, Big Bad Toy Store, Dorkside Toys, and I pre-ordered about $400 worth of stuff in an afternoon. And now that takes me up, I think, through May of this year, at least what's been released, or what's been announced. But yeah, I mean, and I also, you know, hit some stores over the weekend, just in the natural ebb and flow of the household, hitting a Target or a Walmart here and there. Nothing.
I mean, nothing. Don't act like there's a ton of merchandise out there gathering dust, because there isn't. Where is it?
Yeah.
Why don't you guys put that stuff out there? And quit pumping stuff at us, Galaxy of Adventures, 5-inch figures. Nobody wants that crap. We want 3 3/4-inch, and yes, the Black Series, of course, for our 6-inch collectors, especially the ones sitting in the North Canton, Ohio studio over there. But I'm 3 3/4-inch for life. And I just don't understand the lack of attention that's being paid to production and distribution. You know, the term fig hunt for the longest time was a normal phrase heard around my house. I'd get a phone call from the wife and kids at Walmart. Want us to do a fig hunt? Fig check, they would say. Fig check. I'd say yes. And they would explain to me everything that's on the pegs. Oh, don't have that one. Oh, they have that. Grab that one. Oh, no. I have that one. Wait, which one is that? Is that the one with the double-barreled bowcaster? You know, crazy crap I'd be saying to my family on the phone. But it was so much fun. It was a bonding experience with me and my family. And it was another way for me to profess my love and passion for Star Wars is via collecting these 3 3/4-inch action figures that I've been collecting since 1978. And you put out the final film of the Star Wars saga and you don't do anything for merch? That's a big finger that you're sticking up to fans who have stuck with the franchise all this time. And you could go and blame Hasbro for all this, but all those decisions come from Disney and Lucasfilm. Their approach and the volume and all of that stuff, it all comes from those guys. They're just driving it into the ground. And I think they're doing it because they want a certain kind of fan to wither and die on the vine, just like they want a certain kind of film to wither and die on the vine. And they just will just keep counting their money. So what do they care? So Ben Schwartz on Jimmy Kimmel.
All right.
Ben Schwartz.
Who is this guy? Well, he's the, Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, one of those NBC comedies.
Right. The Schwartz. Like Spaceballs.
A likable dude, this guy, mm-hmm. Ben Schwartz. I don't really know much about him, but I think he was one of the guys. He's close to J.J. Abrams.
Oh, he is.
Yes. He and J.J. have a connection, and I believe Ben was brought in to do some scratch tracks for BB-8 back in the Force Awakens post-production era, and you know, guys like him and, of course,
Bill Hader.
Most famously, Bill Hader. Yeah. They provided these scratch vocal tracks for BB-8, so then the sound effects department would really be able to add kind of a personal and human touch to the droid when they were creating his sound effects. So they would just base them on the sounds that Ben and the other guys would do. So Ben maintains his connection to Star Wars and J.J. Abrams. He was on the set of Episode 9. As a matter of fact, they showed a Anthony Daniels book, I Am 3PO, C-3PO, and they showed In the front page, there is a foreword by J.J. Abrams for that book, and there's a picture of J.J. on the set directing Anthony in his full 3PO wardrobe. And you see, blurry over J.J.'s shoulder, you see Ben Schwartz standing there, like scratching his neck or something. And so they showed that on Jimmy Kimmel. And Ben Schwartz revealed that he received a special thank you credit, special thanks, in The Rise of Skywalker, and reveals exactly what it was for. And it was not for providing a scratch track vocal for BB-8. It was for something entirely different.
I lucked out because I got a special thanks in episode 9. I wrote a couple jokes for C-3PO that got in the movie.
Really?
Which is very, yeah.
How did that happen?
It happened because the movie was done, and J.J. asked if I'd come by and maybe see if I can punch up some stuff. And he's been an incredible influence.
And C-3PO delivered your jokes.
Isn't that insane? I've watched this show enough to know that you know how important and special that is.
Oh, so it's much crazy. Better than saying one of your own jokes.
Oh, my goodness. Know. Yeah, write a joke for C-3PO.
What joke did you write?
Like, can he tell us? Four or five on, yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's like all the jokes he had in the movie.
Yeah. I got the one where he's like, airline peanuts are kind of weird. No, the jokes are not open. Droids walk like this, but Jedi's walk like this. No, my one was, there's a couple. One of them is they come down through the sand pits. I don't know if you remember 9 at all. It just happened. They come down through the sand pits, and someone's looking around. I was like, are you okay? And nobody says C-3PO, and C-3PO comes to the back and says, nobody said my name, but I'm okay. That's a Schwartz.
That's pretty good. I like it.
That's a Schwartz. The Schwartz.
That's good.
Well, that's cool. All right, so J.J. spreading the wealth amongst his friends. And allowing them to play a part in the... Now, I had also have heard over the years that if there is a line that doesn't feel right for 3PO, Anthony Daniels is going to tell
you. Right. Yeah, right.
And he will rewrite the line.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Garlin said, from his experience on the set of The Rise of Skywalker, that C-3PO actor really takes his role very seriously. You wouldn't believe it. But he does. He does take it very seriously. I don't think, obviously, Anthony, that's his main gig and has been his main gig for the better part of 40 years. And he wants to maintain all the integrity in that character. So he does. And I remember Filoni told us a story once where they had Anthony on the Clone Wars, and there was a line about grabbing something with your fingers. And Anthony, he said, oh, no. He said, I'm going to change this to digits instead of fingers. Digits.
Ah.
Digits.
Hey, you know what? You mentioned Jeff Garlin. Did we ever really talk about Jeff Garlin's role in Rise of Skywalker? I mean, we talked about how he was really the first to break the story that he was going to be in the movie. He said he was scanned for an action figure, which goes back to Jimmy's rant from a couple minutes ago.
Where's my Jeff Garlin action figure? 3¾ inch on a vintage card.
But I don't think we ever really... Did we ever see him? I mean, we see him. I mean...
One scene at the Resistance base.
He's on the Resistance base?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's okay.
And you just see him briefly in one scene. He's kind of in the middle of the shot in the background and a little blurry.
Uh-huh.
It makes me believe that there was something in there that he did that got cut out, you know, something. I don't know. A line of dialogue.
He talked about how he misbehaved there on the set and kind of ticked off 3PO.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. So unfortunately, Jeff did get cut out of the film. But he does show up in the visual guide. And Jason, you put a picture of him up here on the screen. That's probably the best damn picture I've seen of his character.
Yeah, kind of a rainbow face.
Yeah, with blue and...
Blue and red and whatever.
Red. He's a very patriotic-looking alien if you are a proud American like myself and Mr. Swanko.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but Jeff Garlin, we love him. I'm hoping that our paths will cross. You know, in the near future, and I can sit down and talk to Jeff a little bit about his experience on the set of episode 9. The only reason I say that is because Jeff is a guy who's from the Chicago area. He's from Chicago. And he does come back to town quite often. And when he does, he makes himself very media friendly. He's very media friendly to the hometown.
Yeah.
And so he does appear on like a, you know, a show hosted by maybe a Wendy Snyder or maybe a show that I would produce here in the next day. You know, the upcoming year, you never know. But like I said, Jeff does show up in Chicago quite a bit and always puts himself out there for his good old media pals. And Wendy, of course, has known Jeff Garland since the days he was playing the Comedy Womb in Lyons, Illinois. Because Wendy's, one of her best friends is Carla Felicia, and she used to run around with Carla Felicia since they were little kids. And Carla went on to write for Mike and Molly and all sort of television stuff.
Yeah,
and she did stand-up comedy when she was younger and was part of the Chicago stand-up comedy circuit with guys like Jeff Garlin, and Bob Odenkirk was also another guy who would come into those circles. And so I'm hoping I can snag an interview. If anyone knows Jeff, just tell him to call us. because, I mean, it's not – listen, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have anything lined up with the man, okay? I can't call him and say, put Jeff on, it's Jimmy Mack. He doesn't know me like that. I have met him a number of times, and I do know he has a habit of leaving his cell phone wherever he is.
He'll
go out of the room and leave the cell phone there on the table. He will leave the restaurant, and the cell phone will be right there on the table. And I've had the pleasure of running after the man with his cell phone on a number of occasions. But knowing how forgetful he is with cell phones, he probably doesn't remember me from a bug on the ground. But I could refresh his memory if I had to. So I don't have anything lined up with Jeff. I'm just saying that the opportunity could present itself to me sometime soon. And if it does, I promise you guys, I will snag an interview.
We got to know. We got to know. How. What did he do to offend Anthony Daniels on the set?
I'm in the new Star Wars. I work with the CP3O guy. He's very proper, and he's very kind gentleman, but he takes it very seriously.
Rebel Force Radio.
You've already made that Star Wars reference.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars parody!
All right, Star Wars and pop culture. We've got, we were talking about the great Josh Robert Thompson, who does such a great, incredible, just uncanny impersonation of George Lucas. He's done a series of these really hilarious videos for Collider on YouTube. They've just been tremendous. It's sort of chronicling George's struggles with the Disney trilogy.
Yeah,
this has been going on for several years.
Anxiety, yeah, the seller's remorse, all very much come through loud and clear in Josh Robert Thompson's depiction of George Lucas. Hilariously so, too. And they call it a deep fake because they have this technology where they can give him George Lucas eyes.
It's incredible.
They react. Oh. They react. How do they do that? I got to know. Like, you know, does he wear like a mask over his face? It's just a green screen? Or does he wear like green screen contact lenses or something? It's amazing. I don't even want to know how they do it. I just love it. So I pulled a couple of clips here from George Lucas in Vegas. The latest Collider deepfake just came out last week on Valentine's Day, starring Josh Robert Thompson. And the first clip I have is a little conversation George is having on the flight to Vegas while he's pounding down many airplane bottles worth of booze.
George Lucas here, creator of Star Wars and Rise of Skywalker was just a disaster. So I'm going to do the only thing that I think is the right thing to do, and that's get a little R&R. The only place I can do that is in the desert, not Tatooine. Vegas. I love Vegas. Yeah, Marty Scorsese. You know Marty?
Not personally.
He's a filmmaker. Every time Marty would wrap a picture, we'd come here and just get crazy. Get shit-faced,
you know? You know Marty. You know Marty, right?
Right.
Yeah, Marty, right?
Well, not personally. He's great, a great, great filmmaker. But, you know, it's just amazing. It's uncanny, that impersonation.
It really is.
how he captures all of the little nuance of the George Lucas delivery. And I think a part in the film, in the YouTube video that really stands out is where he really comes off as so naturally George Lucas is when he's taking this cab ride. And it's hilarious. It's hilarious. So Lucas.
So where are you going today?
Heading out to the desert. Kind of clear my head, you know? I like to go out to the desert. I like sand. You know, sand is coarse and rough and gets everywhere. Oh, I came myself. I told the wife to stay home and take care of the kids. They're all in their 40s now. So it's kind of depressing here during the day. You know, it's like Death Star with the lights turned on.
Well, did you work on Star Wars?
I'm the creator of Star Wars.
You're the creator of Star Wars?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. George Lucas. In the car.
Yeah, well, ultimately, I sold everything, and you see any of the new ones?
I haven't seen any of the new ones.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
But you didn't make the movie, huh?
It's a terrible film.
But you didn't make it. You didn't work on that.
Didn't have anything to do with it. Well, I mean, I had an original idea for Rise of Skywalker that Disney didn't use.
Now, listen, you know, I mean, we're not laughing because he said The Rise of Skywalker is terrible. You know, listen, everyone has their opinions, right? You guys know we like The Rise of Skywalker, so don't go all offended about this guy saying that stuff. It's just...
It's funny. Come on.
You know, I swear to God, if you could put a microphone in front of George Lucas's face and just get him to speak honestly about what he thinks of the sequel trilogy, I really don't think it would be too far off of the mark from what Josh Robert Thompson is presenting us here in this George Lucas Goes to Vegas video. It's hilarious. It's so funny.
Why did I come back here?
What's that, George?
Why did I come back here?
That's what a lot of our listeners say every week when they download Rebel Force.
It's awesome. Do yourself a favor. You got to just watch all of these. I think there's like 5 or 6 of these videos. And it's a saga, as he calls it. It's a whole saga.
I just love that where he's like, I'm the creator of Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I have a feeling that the taxi driver was not in on the joke. I have a feeling that the taxi driver, George Lucas, Star Wars.
I think you're absolutely right. There's just a natural back and forth between those two.
Yeah,
and the driver never appears on camera during this.
Right,
you know? And it's all being shot from the passenger's the shotgun seat up front. You know, right next to the driver, but you never see the driver. So I have to wonder if you're absolutely right. That is a legitimate cabbie or Lyft driver or whatever. Oh, this is just in from Wendy. Mm. She's upstairs torturing herself watching her favorite show, This Is Us. And she informs me that there is not only a Star Wars reference in tonight's broadcast of This Is Us, but there's a Ben Burtt reference as well. So,
that coming next week on Star Wars and Pop Culture.
So there you have a preview of what's coming up next week on Star Wars and Pop Culture. This Is Us. We always get a lot of angry mail whenever we play anything from This Is Us. I hate that show. Hey, listen, I don't watch it either. I can't stand it myself. It seems way too melodramatic for me. But they do drop in quality Star Wars references from time to time.
It's going to wrap things up for us this week. Big thanks to our patron supporters, as always, helping to carry the load for all of you freeloaders out there. No, I'm just kidding.
It's optional, but very appreciated.
Right.
If you want to support Rebel Force Radio via Patreon. And, did we lose our music? No, it's still there. And you get rewarded. Okay, so yes, membership has its privileges. We just released two new episodes of RFR Q&A. Of course, we're getting a lot of great feedback from our new Patreon exclusive show, RFR Comlink, featuring nothing but your listener feedback. And Clone Wars the Classified, doing a big rewatch of that as we get jacked up for the whole season that unfolds as of today. Clone Wars is back, season 7. So we're still going back and revisiting some of those older episodes and having a great time doing it. And we really want you guys to join us. RFR on Patreon at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio.
Yes, please do. Also, if you've left us a voicemail or an email over the last couple weeks, we appreciate that. Big thanks to our first caller, Gary from Phoenix. Gary, you're a winner. No, I don't know. You got on the show.
Don't say that. Gary will use that as like...
He got on the show. That's all the reward he needs. Now, if you'd like to be like Gary and get your voicemail played on Rebel Force Radio, you can leave us a message at 708-3201-RFR. That's 708-320-1737. Or you can record it on your smartphone and then just email it to a show at rebelforceradio.com. show@rebelforceradio.com. You can also send us a video. Why not? We do release videos of the show, so you can do that.
Hey, somebody just came up with a good idea.
Send a video message. What? Who knows?
Send us video messages, especially you guys who are members of Patreon All Access. Instead of just seeing yourself on the show, you can hear... wait, let me take that again. Instead of hearing yourself on the show, you can...
Yeah, see yourself.
You know what I was trying to say. Right. I was so excited because Jason came up with such a good idea. I want to see you guys.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. You can show off your Star Wars collection. Who knows? Sky's the limit. Send it to us.
But yeah, the sky's the limit, but time isn't. Keep it to about 90 seconds, no more than 2 minutes, please. Thank you.
Yes, very good. Also, you can find us on social media. You can check us out on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. We're... can be found at Rebel Force Radio, and except on Twitter, we are RFR Rebel Force. So check us out there. Also, the official website for all things and everything Rebel Force Radio, rebelforceradio.com. And we still love to have your subscriptions on services like iTunes or Apple Podcasts. It's a great place to subscribe to your favorite podcast, including Rebel Force Radio, and also leave us a review. The reviews, we love those as well. Just one rule, please.
Make them good.
And you can find us streaming online at WGNplus.com. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. So just go to YouTube and search for Rebel Force Radio. Hit the subscribe button and hit that notification bell, because that's how you're going to find out if we are broadcasting live as we enter this new era of Star Wars and Clone Wars and our new Star Wars Clone Wars Declassified episodes, which will be carried live arc by arc. So that's a great way to know when we're going live on the air, and you can call us up, give your thoughts about season 7 of the Clone Wars. Also, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, anywhere else you can find podcasts, you can find us here at Rebel Force Radio. That's going to wrap things up for this week. We'll see you next time for RFR. I'm Jason.
And I'm the complete package, Jimmy Mack.
And remember...
the Force will be with you, always.
Frozen in kryptonite.